Welcome to the City of Refuge podcast, where our mission is to equip a diverse community of Christ followers to make him known.
Well, good morning, City of Refuge. My name is Brandon Freemian, and I am the equipping pastor here at the church. We are on week three of our series, Restored, where we are looking at these areas in our lives where we get stuck in our faith because of some area of brokenness in our lives. So 2 weeks ago, we looked at the topic of grief. Last week, we looked at the topic of doubt. And thanks again to Pastor Icky for letting me preach this series. So I'd like for you to imagine with me the night before Jesus was crucified. So Jesus is praying in the garden desperately to the Father. His carefully chosen disciples are sleeping. The guard shows up, and one of his followers, Judas, betrays him with a kiss. As he's arrested, the rest of his disciples scatter, and Jesus is taken to be interrogated by the high priest. Now, Peter and one of the other disciples follows to see what happens. Peter's standing outside. Someone comes up to him, a servant girl, says, "Aren't you one of his disciples?" Peter, having just seen Jesus arrested, says, "No, not me." Then he goes and he begins to warm his hands at a charcoal fire nearby. A little while later, someone else thinks they recognize him. "Weren't you one of his disciples?" And a second time, "I don't know him." A little bit later on, a third person, someone who had been in the garden, thinks they recognize him. "Weren't you there tonight?" A third time, "No, not me." And then the cock crowed. And it says that Peter went out and wept bitterly. He wept bitterly because when push came to shove, when it finally came time for him to show that he was a follower of Jesus, he caved. He denied. He wept bitterly, likely because he remembered back to that time when he had declared to Jesus, "I will follow you even unto death," to which Jesus had replied, "No, Peter, you're going to deny me." And now that time had come. So flash forward a little bit, Jesus goes to the cross. 3 days later, he comes back for the dead, and the disciples are understandably overjoyed about this. And yet, there's still an elephant in the room between Jesus and Peter. They haven't dealt with what happened that night. Well, Peter and some of the other disciples are in Galilee, and Peter decides to go fishing. He goes back to his old profession. They push out in the boat. They go fishing for a while. They don't catch anything. So they come back, and they see a person standing on the shore who tells them to throw the net on the other side. So they throw the net on the other side. Huge catch of fish comes in. Peter immediately recognizes that the man on the shore is Jesus. And in what is a characteristically impulsive way for Peter, he jumps out of the boat, swims to the shore to Jesus. And there Jesus has prepared a fire, and he and Peter and the disciples that are there have breakfast. And now, it's time to talk about the elephant in the room. So we're in John 21, starting in verse 15. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." He said to him, "Feed my lambs." He said to him a second time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." He said to him, "Tend my sheep." He said to him the third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, "Do you love me?" And he said to him, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep. Truly, truly, I say to you, when you were young, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands, and another will dress you and carry you where you do not want to go." This he said to show by what kind of death he was to glorify God. And after saying this, he said to him, "Follow me." Whenever I read this story, I immediately relate to Peter. I know in my own life the places where there are brokenness. I know my history, the places where I have sinned. I know the places where I have made promises to God. I know the places where I had made commitments and ultimately failed in those things and was unfaithful in what I told God I was going to do. I relate to that in this passage. And so when I read this, there is definitely a part of me that puts myself in Peter's shoes and hears that question, "Brandon, do you love me?" Feel that pretty acutely. And if that's you this morning, if when you read this passage, that hits you, and there is that conviction that, hey, there's this area in my life that I have been unfaithful to God, let today be the day that you turn that around, that you confess that to the Lord, maybe later confess that to someone else. Like, do not ignore that if that is you this morning. That being said, when I was preparing this passage for this morning, what I really wanted to do, I wanted to talk about when we're in that place of recognizing that we've been unfaithful to God, what do we do about it? How do we respond? The problem is, honestly, Peter's not a great example of that. Like, he doesn't do a good job here, right? Like, there's this huge elephant in the room between him and Jesus. He doesn't bring it up. He doesn't apologize. He doesn't confess. Like, he seems totally passive in this. So we're still going to talk about that just next week. All right? Next week we're going to look at Jesus' kind of late appearance to the Apostle Paul. And we'll talk about that more. Today I want to ask you to relate to another character. One that may actually be harder for you to relate to. And that's Jesus. Jesus here as the one who has been denied. Jesus here as the one who has been hurt. Jesus here as the one who has been sinned against. Jesus as the one who now, in despite of all that, is seeking to restore a relationship with Peter. Now, I don't know about you, but I struggle to relate to Jesus in that. And there's times in my life where I really don't want to. Right? What Jesus does here is hard to do. And it's hard for two reasons, at least. One, it's hard because of the hurt that's there. And I think it's important that when we look at Jesus in this passage, we do not think of Jesus as some sort of dispassionate person in this. Right? I believe that Jesus felt the sting of the denial of a close friend. I believe that Jesus felt the sting of having the dishonesty of a close friend. And the reason I believe that is because of Hebrews 4:15. It says that we have a high priest who is not unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin. The consistent witness of the New Testament is that Jesus Christ experienced everything that we experienced, which means when a close friend betrays you, it hurts. And I think if we deny the fact that Jesus is probably hurt by what Peter did, we've come close to denying that he was actually human. And that is one of the things that makes it hard, is when we've been sinned again, that hurt is there. And when we're hurt, our first instinct is not to turn around and seek the well-being of the person that hurt us. Right? That is not where we go first. Right? Our natural tendency, well, we go a couple ways. Right? There's the aggressive response, so there's the, physically, verbally, hit back. Then there's the passive-aggressive response, right, where you just go silent. I don't know if y'all have ever done this. I definitely have done this, but the part where, you know, someone's hurt you and you just go quiet on them, you're just going to stoic, like you're going to demonstrate how hurt you are by the fact that you're not going to talk to them, right? Like, that's another way you can go about that. Neither one of those is seeking the restoration of the relationship, and that's the way we naturally tend to go, right? Maybe it's aggressive, maybe it's passive-aggressive, but it ain't restorative. And that's why Jesus has to teach us that we got to love our enemies. Right? That's why later on Paul would teach us in Romans 12 to try and live at peace with all men. And that's actually why even later on Peter himself would teach to not return evil for evil, but to return good for evil. I think Peter taught that not just because that's what Jesus taught. He taught that because that's what he experienced right here with Jesus. Right? When he had done evil to Jesus, Jesus instead returned good to him. So that's one aspect of it that makes it hard. It's just the hurt that's there. But there's something even more than that, because I think underneath the hurt, there's a deeper issue that happens when we've been sinned against. I think it's significant then when Jesus confronts Peter, right? He does not ask him, hey, why'd you deny me? Right? He doesn't talk about the circumstances. He doesn't dig into that. He doesn't ask him, why did you deny me? He asks him, do you love me? I think there Jesus is getting at the heart issue that exists, because when we have been sinned against, what is fundamentally attacked is love. And that is one of the deepest longings we have, one of the deepest needs we have, is to be loved by others. And sin is always contrary to love. Sin always calls into question whether love still exists. So when Peter denied Jesus, when he lied about his connection to him, what actually was called into question was, does Peter actually love Jesus? Because his actions said otherwise. And I think the same is true in our relationships, that when we've been sinned against, it's not just the sin itself and whatever the details of that hurt were, but then we also have this question lingering in the back of our minds of, does that person actually love me? And that question, that attack on that thing that's so fundamental of us, is the other thing that makes it really hard to, in that moment, to try and pursue restoration and reconciliation of the relationship. And yet, we see that is exactly what Jesus does. And I think there's a key there to what it is that we're pursuing when we're seeking restoration of a relationship, when we're seeking reconciliation. Because it is not the undoing of the hurt. Right? There is nothing that we can do to make up for it. There is nothing that the person who has hurt us can do to make up for it. Here, with Peter, right, there is nothing he can do to undo the fact that he denied Jesus. As much as he might want to, he can't undo the deny. He cannot go back in time and fix it. It's done. It's history now. It's part of the relationship now. And he can't do anything to make it better, to make it up to Jesus, right? Like, what is he going to do? What is he going to say that is somehow going to make up for the fact that when it really came to count, Peter failed him? There is nothing he can do to make it up. So it's not about undoing the hurt. I think what it is about is reestablishing a love relationship despite the hurt. It's reestablishing the love relationship with that hurt forgiven, which is different than undoing the hurt. So how does Jesus do that in this passage? How does he pursue this with Peter? So a couple of things that I see here. One, I love, like, Jesus is just amazing. Have you noticed when Jesus speaks, like, he says so much with so few words? Like, he is so good at that. I wish I was better at that. He is so good at that. And I love the fact that when he goes into this conversation with Peter, Peter has no idea what they're talking about, right? He doesn't even know that they're in the conversation about the fact that he denied Jesus. Jesus is just like, hey, do you love me? It's kind of out of the blue. So he begins with this question, Simon Peter, do you love me more than these? Now, we don't actually know what the these are. There's a couple of potential options there. One is that he's talking about like the fish or the fishing gear, this idea that, hey, Simon Peter, you're kind of going back to your old ways. Like, do you love me more than this old life that you had? So that's a possibility. He could be referring to the other disciples that are sitting there around the fire, right? Do you love me more than all of these? Maybe getting at some of those very bold statements that Peter had made earlier about how much he was going to follow Jesus and how much he loved Jesus. Do you really love me with that same passion? We don't really know what the reference is there. But regardless, he poses this question to him, to which Peter says, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." And Jesus says, "Feed my lambs." Then he asks him a second time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" And he said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love me." And he said to him, "Tend my sheep." Then he says to him a third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" It says, Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, "Do you love me?" This is the point in the conversation where Peter understands what they're talking about. Right? This is the point in the conversation where Peter understands that they are now addressing the elephant in the room with that third repetition. And what I find important about that is you do not walk away from this passage feeling like that Jesus is just like, "Oh, it's okay." Right? It's all right. It's good. You know, I'm alive now. It's okay that you denied me. Not a problem. Right? There's no way that you can walk away feeling that. Like, he brings this up in a way that is designed to be impactful to Peter, to show him, no, what you did was not okay. Right? It grieves Peter. And yet, he also does it in a way that gives Peter three opportunities to declare his love for Jesus for each time that he had denied him. And I think there's something there. It's as if Jesus is saying to Peter, "No, it's not okay, but yes, it is forgiven, and I want to have a love relationship with you." And I think that's important when we are approaching restoration in our own relationships, that we are not going into it saying that what was done was okay. We're going into it saying, "I'm forgiving you and wanting to pursue a love relationship." Now, I am not clever like Jesus, right? I said earlier, like, I just don't have his way with words. I have to use simple words for this. So something that I was taught when I was younger, I actually think this came from the pastor that I grew up under. He talked a lot about this need to verbalize, to put into words when we're seeking reconciliation. And so he taught this pattern for if you have hurt someone, and it goes like this: "I'm sorry, I was wrong, please forgive me." Right? There's this acknowledgement of the fact that it's not okay and the fact that you're seeking forgiveness. Now, those are very hard words to say when you have sinned against another person because you're embarrassed by it. I understand. So we're going to practice that right now, okay? So I want you to say with me, "I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
I was wrong.
I was wrong.
Please forgive me."
Please forgive.
Now, that is not something that you just say rote, right? You have to contextualize it. But in terms of actually verbalizing the fact that you're seeking forgiveness and that you recognize it's not okay, I think is a very important part of reconciliation. On the other side of that, I think that there is something very powerful about speaking forgiveness when it's there between you and another person if they've sinned against you. Right? Because our inclination, we're trying to kind of break the tension. It's awkward when you're having these conversations. And so the temptation is when someone confesses something to you or addressing the hurt, is just be like, "Oh, it's fine, it's okay, we're cool, you know, it's all right." But it's not okay, right? And I think it is extremely powerful to, in that moment, say, "I forgive you." Let them hear those words from you. That is a very freeing thing. So, again, we see Jesus do a different pattern here because he is more clever than me. But those are some things that I have found helpful in terms of restoring relationship, is really putting into words forgiveness and reconciliation. So that's the first thing. Not okay, but forgiveness. Second, Jesus restores Peter in a way that is appropriately public. So although this interaction is happening between Jesus and Peter, right? It's in the context of the other disciples there, and I think that's important. And the reason I think he does that is because, one, the disciples knew about what Peter had done, and two, he's getting ready to stick Peter in a position of leadership, of establishing his church, right? So it's important for the disciples to see Peter being restored in the way this happens. And I think this doesn't apply to every situation that we might have reconciliation, but it's important that restoration be appropriately public if that needs to happen. So that's something to consider. I'd also say there's the other side of that, though, which restoration does not need to be more public than it needs to be. Right? Because our inclination when someone has hurt us is not to go to another person, to that person, and seek reconciliation. It's to talk to the five other people who might be interested about the fact that there's conflict happening, right? Like, that's our inclination, is to go to other people. And so don't let restoration be more public than it needs to be either. Third, we see Jesus approach Peter with tremendous grace. And here's where I see that. So there's actually a couple words in Greek for love. One of them is agape, and that sort of means this unconditional love. It's the love of God. So throughout the New Testament, agape love is associated with the love of God, sort of this perfect love. There's the word filio, which is more kind of brotherly love. It's like what would you would have with a sibling or a close friend. And then there's eros, which is a more romantic love, like you would have with a spouse. Now there's an interesting pattern that happens in this passage. When Jesus asks Peter, "Do you love me?" he says, "Do you agape me? Do you have this perfect unconditional love for me?" To which Peter replies, "Yes, Lord, you know that I filio. I love you like a brother." The second time Jesus asks him, "Simon, do you agape me?" To which Peter replies, "Lord, you know that I filio, love you like a brother." Third time, Jesus says, "Simon, do you filio? Do you love me like a brother?" To which Peter says, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you like a brother." Now, some commentators debate whether this is a significant difference. I think it is. I think the pattern here is not an accident. And here's what I think it means. I think both Peter and Jesus understand the fact that Peter's love is inadequate. Peter does not have agape love for Jesus. He has filial love. There is real, genuine love there, but it is imperfect. It is inadequate. That Peter has already demonstrated, not, you know, a couple days beforehand, in the fact that he denied Jesus. So I think it's interesting that you have this pattern ending with Jesus being like, "Do you have this brotherly love?" and leaving it at that. So there's this sense where both of them recognize that the love is inadequate, and yet Jesus is still willing to pursue relationship with Peter. And I think that is huge in taking into situations where we have been hurt and trust has been broken. Because there is a knowledge there that the love that that person has for us is inadequate. That has been demonstrated. And that can be a barrier to us wanting to actively pursue restoration with that person. But what we see with Jesus here is, even though that is the case, nonetheless, he still pursues restoration. Lastly, Jesus creates a context for Peter to demonstrate future love and faithfulness. You see that after each of these questions, "Simon, do you love me? Peter, do you love me? Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." He responds with, "Feed my sheep, tend my lambs." He's pointing to this new role that he's appointing Peter to care for his people. Right? Peter is about to step into this shepherding role of caring for the flock of God. This place where he is going to have the opportunity to demonstrate the love that he has for Jesus by loving others. But even more than that, you have this prophecy that comes at the end of the passage. "Truly, truly, I say to you, when you were young, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands, and another will dress you and carry you where you do not want to go. This he said to show by what kind of death he was to glorify God. So after this exchange, Jesus predicts that Peter is going to be martyred, that he is going to be killed for the faith. And that came about. Peter was martyred, and as tradition has it, he was crucified. Tradition has it that he actually was crucified upside down, that he was asked to be crucified upside down because he didn't feel worthy to die in the same way as Jesus. Now, on the one hand, you could look at this and say, this kind of seems like a dark thing for Jesus to say at the end of this interchange. But yet, I think it's significant that if you look at the Gospels, there's two places where you see Jesus prophesy something about Peter. The first one comes after he declares, "Lord, I will go with you even unto death," to which Jesus prophesies, "No, you're going to deny me." And then here, after the denial, but after the restoration has taken place, Jesus prophesies over Peter's life that, you know what, you are going to live up to that promise that you made to me back then. And someday you will indeed follow me, even to the point of death. We have this beautiful picture of Jesus giving Peter opportunity to demonstrate his love and trust. And that, I think, is something that is very hard to do when you have been hurt because your defenses are up, right? But to look for active ways to give that person opportunities to rebuild trust with you, I think, is a huge step in restoring a love relationship with that person. So these are kind of the four major things that I see that Jesus does. It's not okay, it's forgiven. Restoration was appropriately public. He approached with tremendous grace, and he creates context for Peter to demonstrate future love and faithfulness. Now, one point of clarification on this. I recognize that our ability to seek restoration in a love relationship is not wholly dependent on us, right? There's another person in this picture. And sometimes, because of what they're doing, we may not be in a place to fully restore the relationship. And I think this is particularly true in cases where there is active abuse going on, where physical abuse is happening. I am not saying with this that you should seek to be close to that person in your life. Right? Sometimes the best way you go about restoring a love relationship is by creating distance so that there's safety and the possibility of working towards a healthier relationship. I think that's an important clarification here. But I think even in those cases, in the cases where the other person is not seeking restoration, there is still the opportunity for us to pursue the love relationship, if only in our own hearts pursuing forgiveness of that person and looking for those opportunities where it is appropriate to begin the work of restoring the relationship. And it's also worth saying, this is really, really hard and unnatural for us. This is not something we do separate from the work of God in our life. Jesus always acted in response to the Father and in the power of the Spirit, including in this situation, and that is what we will have if we are going to restore in the places where we've been badly hurt by someone else. We do not love our enemies separate from the Father. And we also do not love our enemies or seek reconciliation unless we've had a deep encounter with the gospel. Because it is flowing out of our understanding of our own forgiveness that we are able to forgive others. When we look at the cross and recognize the amount that we have been forgiven, the fact that, like Peter, Jesus has come to restore relationship with us, even though our love is inadequate, that is where we can come to begin to forgive someone who has hurt us. But I recognize that sometimes God has to change our hearts before we're ready to restore with another person. And so I want to create some time for that this morning. As we've done in the previous weeks, I want to have a time of prayer together where if you have a relationship that is broken, that is needing to be restored, and maybe your heart's just not there yet, I want to ask you to bring it to the Father this morning, to change your heart in that. And also, if, like I said earlier, there is some area where you feel like you've been unfaithful to God or unfaithful to another person and you haven't had a chance to confess that yet, we'll use that time, this time for that as well. So I'd like to ask for any of the volunteers that have agreed to help with praying, if you wouldn't mind coming forward. So we'll have a couple minutes of quiet, and then I will close this in prayer. So let's pray together. Heavenly Father, I thank you that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. And I thank you that even on the other side of salvation, that as our love is demonstrated, is inadequate, you nonetheless continue to restore, continue to pursue, continue to demonstrate love. Lord, we need that in our lives, both for ourselves, but Lord, we need that to reflect back to others as well. So I pray now that you would surface in our hearts if there's an area where we are resisting restoration. I pray that you would remove those barriers this morning.